Joining us today is Leilani Gray. Leilani is the founder of a company called Be The Change, an HR consulting organization, but unlike any other, with a social entrepreneurship mindset. What drives Leilani and her work is her dedication to end human trafficking. We've covered a broad range of issues from human trafficking, mental health, D&I, and the COVID impact on organizations in this episode. We chose Leilani as our guest on the podcast, inspired not only by her achievements in the HR world and fight against human trafficking, but also by her resilient spirit and courage to present her authentic self in any circumstance.
Tell us about Change, Be The Change HR.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much actually in the name. So Be The Change HR is an HR consulting firm that's also a social enterprise. So we do human resources for small mid-market businesses, but on the give back piece, we do free job readiness courses and classes and coaching one-on-one for individuals who've been trafficked, homeless, veterans in transition, you name it. We work with the nonprofits that support those individuals in their transitions in order to teach them how to get ready for a job. So Be The Change HR, I always say it's not just a cool quote by Gandhi, which actually is tattooed on my back, not the Be The Change HR part. I have to specify that because people are like, so you have a company tattooed on you? I'm like, no, it's the Gandhi quote. But it's really important because it's not just human resources. We're really helping individuals get back to work from very difficult life situations.
Thank you. So one of the things that we, Diane and I, loved about your concept around what you're doing with HR is this model around social entrepreneurship. And there is, so how do you decide what social issues to invest in?
I always say it comes from your own personal passion. For most of my adult life, I've known that I've wanted to help individuals who've been trafficked. I also knew that it would take some type of internal strength and ability to take on those stories, the ability to be really present for someone that's been through something like that. So I knew in my 20s, there's no way. There was no way that I felt like I was ready to do that. And it wasn't until I was walking down the streets of Busan. So I'm in Busan, walking down the streets. It's like a Tuesday night. It's late. I'm going to go get myself some dinner. I'm walking. And then this idea just pops in my head. It's like, you're ready to work with trafficking victims now. And I was like, that is really weird because, again, I'm on vacation. I'm just going to get my dinner. And I was like, okay, weird thought, but got it. You know, I went, picked up my meal, came back, and I was walking back to the bus stop an entirely different way than I had come in. And in the alleyways and whatnot, it's quite safe, right? Really lit. There's a lot of people. But I walk down an alleyway and another alleyway, and I end up in the red light district. And you could just tell, you know, it says karaoke, but there's silhouettes of girls and, you know, you can't see inside. And then I was like, I freaking got the message. Like, I got it. I had already started my company. I had already had put into elements of how we're going to give back, but it wasn't entirely clear how that was going to happen yet. So I get back and then I decide I'm just going to start having the conversation. I want to help people who've been trafficked. That was it. Within a month's time, I was introduced to the founder of a nonprofit out of Las Vegas called the Cupcake Girls. And they help men and women out of the sex industry and then also those who've been rescued from trafficking. As if you can imagine, in the Las Vegas area, that's quite common. And there started the catalyst of me working with victims who have been trafficked. And then I tell individuals who want to do this type of work, whether it is a social enterprise or corporate social responsibility, choose the thing that you're super passionate about. Me, eradication of sex trafficking. But other people can be anything. Like, there's so much that this world needs.
Just well, where does this come from for you, though? Where does this come? I mean, Where did this need for being a social entrepreneur stem from?
It is a personal story. And every once in a while, someone will ask me that question. And I was like, oh, you see me, right? And let me rewind even more. So starting in 2008, I worked with a nonprofit called Working Wardrobes, and they help men and women out of all kinds of life situations, teaching them job skills. I know what it's like to climb out of a deep, deep hole and get yourself from, you know, one step to the next step to the next step. That's why I started volunteering in the first place. I never go into, I call them all the gory details, But I, you know, growing up, some of it is growing up, I battled mental illness for all intents and purposes. I shouldn't be here times about three, twice in 1 year, attempted to commit suicide. Besides that, abuse of drugs, like this whole sort of story that I went through. And when I started to get healthier and when I started to pick myself back up, I told myself, when you get to a certain spot where you feel like you could help support others, it will be, you know, your time to turn around and offer a helping hand. And that's exactly what I did in 2008. I started volunteering with Working Wardrobes and started that path of really like having this huge passion of wanting to help men and women, mainly women, you know, find their own potential and realize that. And as I climbed the corporate ladder and as I, you know, started my business, I thought like this, that's why I started Be the Change HR. I wanted to do human resources and philanthropy under the same roof. I wanted to have this element of really helping other people find their way.
So I have to pause you there because the story of resilience, I think, is so important to hear about, especially because right now mental health is just a topic that corporate organizations are dealing with, individuals and family households are dealing with their kids. We're all dealing with it because of this global pandemic, right?
Yes.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about that resilience. Were you first gen, second gen here in the U.S.?
Yeah, first generation. So my father's generation came over during World War II and were refugees from the Philippines, which essentially came over on a boat and landed in Maui. That is why my name is Leilani. My generation has mostly Hawaiian names. Very much they assimilated Hawaiian culture. So I know more about Hawaiian culture than I ever do about Filipino culture. But as you can imagine, in fleeing a war-torn country and in talking about my family, they are the sweetest, kindest people you will ever meet. You would never know that my oldest uncles were fighting in the jungle. You would never know that, you know, for all intents and purposes, they were well off in the Philippines, in the village that they lived in. They were farmers. And then the invasion happened and my grandfather was a POW for a year. My grandmother suffered many atrocities and they up and left the Philippines and started a new life in Maui being sugarcane field workers. So it's such a beautiful story. My grandmother lived to 102. She was 4'8", so a very cute, small woman, but never messed with her. She would punch you if she heard you cursing in her house. She also would drink Bud Light every day and smoke cigarettes until she couldn't anymore, almost probably like up until the final few years of her life. But even at her 100th birthday, I remember her asking us for cigarettes, like someone go buy her cigarettes. So she could smoke.
Yeah. Wow. When talking about resilience, that is a rock grandmother you had. And I want to delve back because you bring such amazing points. I really want to go back to. I know you mentioned, you know, you're helping, you said, you know, you're going to, even though you may be going through difficult times, for you, you wanted to still help others. And that was actually helpful on your journey, you mentioned. So tell us how, you know, that resilience is built and how your pain, you know, you're working through that or you have worked through that and you're like, whatever, I'm going to keep pushing forward. Tell us more about that time in your life and where you push yourself forward. And it's like, you know, I really want to help others. Through my pain.
Yeah, and you're taking me back. Like let me say it this way. In looking back at that time period, it feels like, and I say this often and even to myself, it's like I know what hell is like because I've been there more than once. And it is such a dark place to be in. Yeah, anybody who's been through anything like, I think we all have. We've all had that place where we're like, that was my bottom. And then you look back, it is like climbing a mountain, right? And I actually am a mountaineer. So this is a great, great analogy. You know, you start out and when you're working your way out of a situation like that, if you look all the way to the summit of a mountain, you're like, look how fucking far that is. like, mm-hmm. and how high that, like, that looks impossible. But if you put your head down and you take step by step and you rest when you need to, and you, what's really important is you take a look back and see how far you've come. Even if it's just, okay, I went a quarter mile. Well, it's freaking hard to climb a mountain, right? So take a rest and look back at where you've come. I've done that several times, so much so that, you know, it brings me to tears to figure out, okay, here's where you've been. So I didn't have a job for a certain period of time for maybe not obvious reasons, but I didn't. When I felt healthy enough to get that first job, I had already at that point before that period started a business, had a consulting firm, making six figures, you know, in my like mid-20s, I was doing well. And then, you know, the shit hit the fan. I went through what I did during that time period, which it happened more than once to me, but during that time period, almost lost my life a couple of times, ended up hospitalized, like really bad time period. When I felt like I was ready, I got my first job. Now imagine you're making six figures, you're running your own consulting firm. I picked up a bookkeeping and payroll job for minimum wage, and I didn't care. I knew this is a step in the right direction. On top of that, the person that I worked for was, she was so interesting. She was a world-renowned dominatrix and corset maker. Like, she was
insane.
And she was older too. Miss Antoinette was her name. And I remember I was doing payroll and
fitting.
Yeah. Miss Antoinette.
She's a dominatrix or she's a corset maker?
Both. She was both. Yeah. And I remember I was doing payroll and she's like, MTV Berlin is coming and I need a model. And can you do it? And I was like sitting there like, sure. So somewhere in a reel somewhere, I'm standing there in a corset while she's pointing at me and MTV Berlin is interviewing her on her corset business and her being a dominatrix. But that was my first job. And vanity aside, I didn't care. I'm like, I'm going to stick with this until I get to the next phase. You know, the next phase was another part-time job. And the next phase was another part-time job. And I stuck with, you know, always ask for more money. Right. Wherever I was going, I needed to make X amount percent more. At one point, I started saying 10K more. I need to make 10K more than the last job. I was changing jobs when it wasn't popular to change jobs every year because I wanted to continue to advance myself. So, you know, it's just the little steps. But it all started with minimum wage working for a dominatrix / corset maker in Orange County, California. So it's just one step at a time.
Was that something that, like, when you think about your parents and you being first gen or second gen, that, you know, were there expectations that they had of what career they wanted their daughter to go into?
Not at all. Not at all. I had the opposite of what you think a quintessential Asian parent would be. On top of that, my mother was dyslexic and did not do well in school. So it wasn't, by the way, amazing woman, amazing registered nurse. She's now retired, but that was never pushed in the household. In fact, it was more like, you don't have to try that hard. And I'm like, but I'm an overachiever. Like, I already was type A when I was little. So it was a great environment to be supported in whatever I wanted to do, though. My mom just wanted me to be busy. So it was like, whatever you decide to do, just do the thing. And so for me, that was music when I was really young. I started playing instruments when I was in third grade and continued that along with dance. But there was no like, you need to go to this school or you need to, none of that, none of that at all. That was my own pressure that I put on myself.
So when you're talking about the Filipino community, or the community that you grew up in, were there any challenges or pressures that you felt growing up in a Filipino community about expectations put on you as a woman and as a woman who has a career?
I would say, so where I grew up, there wasn't a Filipino community. The community was our family. And in our family, the oldest is responsible for all the things. So there was that understanding that I was responsible for everything my little sister did. Now, if you fast forward to today, my sister and I don't argue. We get along swimmingly, but I think that's because I was given the task of like taking care of her and telling her what to do. And then we also came from a split home. So while that chaos was going on, like I was taking care of her. So number one, you know, I was always in charge and well, I am today too, like naturally that way. The other was the installation of family and the expectations behind that. My family at the time was one of the only families that had split, and that made it different for us growing up. I also, in that same family, was one of the only ones that got pregnant and wasn't married. I have a son. So that was a thing, like, oh my gosh, like Leilani got pregnant, she needs to get married. And mm-hmm. we did, it didn't work out, but we did. So there was those elements of the family that we definitely felt the pressure from, but it doesn't outweigh anywhere near the good of having a big supportive family. They're all fantastic.
You know, these issues that many of your clients are dealing with, who you have these classes with, who have been sex trafficked. Now you're in the HR space. So how do you basically find the right resources to help them get through what they need?
That's a great question. And that starts with us, actually. So my team of HR professionals, they get training prior to doing the coaching. There are prerequisites for them to do that. I'm fortunate enough to have an education since 2008 to present, where I've worked with several different victims that have suffered trauma. We have partnered with a nonprofit out of Orange County called Free to Thrive. And Free to Thrive has a four-part trauma-informed series. The first one is how to work with someone who's been through trauma. The second part is about vicarious trauma. That is, oh, I'm listening to the story. What am I taking on board? Right. So you got to stay healthy for them.
That's got to be. Yes. Yes.
So the team takes that prior to going in. Besides that, the conversation isn't around, oh, you're a survivor of, or you have been through. That's not what we're there for. We're there to identify what roadblocks they have in order to get that healthy, gainful employment. And it often starts with something as simple as a resume, right? That's what you need. That's where we start. And it could be they don't have anything, and we start to help them build that. Maybe they have something, but it needs to be polished up. We do have resources that they can use if, you know, let's say they need part of their record expunged because they were trafficked, but that's what organizations like Free to Thrive are for. And through their nonprofits, they have social workers they work with, right? So we can always point back mm-hmm. to that. Our job, what is the path to get healthy, gainful employment, and how do we get you there?
Mm. That's incredible. Is there anyone, you know, our show is about trailblazers and innovative leaders like yourself. Is there anyone else in that space doing what you're doing? This is incredible.
No, I don't think so. I kind of launched into figuring, like, is anyone else doing this? I know there's many wonderful, you know, social organizations that are helping individuals with trafficking, but not specifically this model. Not that I've found. If you are doing this, please reach out to me. Let me know so we can share stories. But no, not yet.
Hmm. So I'm curious now what's happening right now with the global pandemic, with the political kind of bipolarization of politics that played out in the last 4 years, and the racial unrest. What are you seeing now from an HR perspective is impacting maybe your clients, either in the HR front and I would imagine possibly even with the social entrepreneurial activities that you're involved in? What are you seeing?
There's so much happening right now. The bigger conversation is, in the beginning of this pandemic, people kept saying back to normal, back to normal. That doesn't exist anymore, right?
Mm-hmm. New normal was a big tag term. Yes.
The new normal. Yeah. Our workforce has entirely changed. Unless you make widgets or you have to go somewhere, like how you, all of us are sitting together, this is a reality for individuals. It no longer makes sense to hop in your car and sit in traffic for an hour and a half and show up in an office just to hop in your car again and sit in traffic for an hour and 45 minutes, because it's usually longer when you go home, and call that a life, right? So a lot of the conversation is a bigger picture of what does the new workforce look like? How do we keep people feeling together, feeling engaged when we can't hop into a conference room? Our team, every Wednesday, we have co-working hours where we hop on Zoom and you can just pop in. You can show up, you can work. I play music, hopefully people like it, but we can hang out and they can ask questions just as if we were sitting in a co-working space and you wanted to come in and hang out with everyone or not. So there's creative ways to continue to keep people together. There is a lot more awareness behind unconscious bias, behind, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace. There's a lot of understanding and consciousness around, you know, yes, you are a for-profit business, but what are you doing to help people who are less fortunate?
To help the community, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that if you are behind on any of these items, you're not paying attention, you will be left behind because, you know, the generation coming into the workforce, you know, Gen Z, the millennials, they care about these things. And it should really be done from the heart. It should not be done because it's going to help your bottom line. And that's the biggest thing. People can see through that crap.
This is such a hot topic right now. And I'm sure everyone is thinking, and the elephant in the room is, when will things go back to normal? Like you said, it doesn't make sense to drive two-ish hours back and forth to work. Is that productive? When do you think this normalcy will come back?
I don't. I was just in a conversation this morning about it's no longer like employee benefits and perks and making a great culture is no longer about having free cereal and free lunches or having a ping pong table. Like, you know, if that's fun and that's awesome, but that's not what it's about anymore. Work-life balance, somewhat of a fallacy in a way, like your life is your life. I think what people really need to look at is how do we make the experience of being an employee, being in an organization, and then being a human being, one big holistic, great experience. And that again comes from someone internally and then throughout an organization. Again, unless it's a brick and mortar, you got to be there. Our wonderful restaurants, hospitals, people who make widgets, if it's not in that environment, I don't see it going back to normal.
What is the impact then on the social entrepreneurship front?
I think a lot of it comes from how conscious our workers are, right? They want to work for organizations who make a difference. It's funny, several times in building this business, people have said, oh, what a great marketing idea, or what a great retention tool. I'm like, no, that's not the reason why I started this. It was to make change. And here's what I'll say. If you have the ability to really help in any way, shape, or form, you just have an obligation to do it. I just think that's how it is. And that can look different for all different types of people. But I think that the organizations that really embrace that and mean that will advance.
Leilani, what is the change that you seek to see?
I always talk about being introspective. A lot of the work I do is on me personally. So, I mean, even this year, I have a business coach, I have a therapist, I have a year-long program that I'm in, all to develop myself. So although it's not like a popular answer for the outside world, I believe that the change that I seek is internal. And one of my philosophies about life is that one of the purposes is to end suffering internally, and then if you can, help people externally. So if you look at the business model that I've built, first and foremost, I work on myself a lot. And then second, it is, okay, you know, and I'm at the point when I started the business, but I told myself when you are ready, there's more impact and change that you should do. So I started Be the Change HR, and that's where that comes from in order to help other individuals. So just to end suffering, we're all suffering in some way, shape, or form. And I feel like it's part of my purpose to help individuals who are in really difficult life situations get on their feet.
With that being said, I know, you know, there's a lot of unfortunate circumstances surrounding the Asian community right now with the Asian, you know, campaigns on Asian hate, et cetera. And you talk right on that subject. What is your platform doing or can do to help this?
The biggest thing, and this, you know, in the corporate world, we call it diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's a hot topic right now. It has been for the past year. And for unfortunate reasons, right? George Floyd murder, everything that's happened this last year, but it has led us to this point right now. Leaders and organizations really should work on that within the organization. And the beginning of that is education and awareness. Again, I'll point back at ourselves. Education and awareness of self first, and then, you know, really instilling it in your organization.
in hearing your story, the theme of resilience pops up in my head with everything that that you've been through, what you're doing now, and also just looking at our world. The resilience is what we all are having to do. When you think about your Filipino heritage, what do you think is that strength that it brought to you and how you lead today?
I've talked about her before, but my grandmother, the matriarch of our family, how amazingly tough she was. I mean, if you were to make like a poster of like a badass woman, I mean, she drinking Bud Light, smoking cigarettes, like smacking you in the house if you cursed. But the minute that she knew that we were leaving, she would just stand there. I remember just clearly stand there on the driveway with tears in her eyes. She loved us all so, so very much. And, you know, that is a infinite story of resilience of a woman who led a family, who, you know, took the family from a war-torn country and made a better life for all of us, you know. And like I said earlier, I have no idea what any of that is like. I just know that it's because of my family that I'm here today and I'm able to do these things.
You can learn more about Leilani's social entrepreneurship efforts and her company at www.bethechangehr.org. If you or someone you know is having thoughts of suicide, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. In addition, you can find resources and ways to support victims and survivors of sex and labor trafficking by connecting with the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-373-7888 or text 233-733. We hope you enjoy the stories on our podcast as much as we enjoy unveiling them. A lot of time and detailed editing goes into bringing these stories, and the timing of our efforts couldn't be more critical to our community than now. A big thank you to our sponsors, Renegade Digital. Renegade Digital is a full-service digital marketing boutique. They offer cloud, web, app, and social media services. If you are interested in serving as an ally to help us continue to bring the spotlight to the stories behind these amazing Asian American women trailblazers, please reach out to us for sponsorship and donation opportunities. Thanks for listening. Be safe and be well.